I'd like to introduce the next session. Rabbi Dr. Mark Angel. We had the good fortune of having Rabbi and Mrs. Angel with us for this past Shabbos, for Shabbaton at our shul. And sometimes you feel very privileged and ennobled to have guests, and that was certainly the case with the Angels. As scholarly as Rabbi Angel is, so is their interpersonal relationships, and it was a pleasure to have them with us. I'm going to give a brief introduction to Rabbi Angel, who will be speaking on Who Becomes a Jew? Conversion to Judaism in the Current Debate. Rabbi Angel has been serving Congregation Sherit Yisrael, the historic Spanish and Portuguese synagogue in New York City, since 1969. I just have to mention this, especially in this synagogue. He told me since 1750, they've had 8 rabbis in the shul. In the autumn of 2007, just recently, he founded the Institute for Jewish Ideas and Ideals and serves as its director. The Institute works to foster an intelligent, compassionate, and inclusive Jewish orthodoxy. He's the author and editor of 25 books and numerous articles, and has won acclaim for his studies in Jewish history and thought. Among his recent books are Losing the Rat Race, Winning at Life, Choosing to be Jewish, The Orthodox Road to Conversion, which is here, which he will speak on today. Rabbi Chaim David Halevi, Gentle Scholar and Courageous Thinker, and Foundations of Sephardic Spirituality, The Inner Life of Jews of the Ottoman Empire. He's been active in a wide range of communal organizations, including the American Sephardi Federation, Jewish National Fund, Healthcare Chaplaincy, and UJA Federation of New York. He's past president of the Rabbinical Council of America. He has lectured widely throughout the United States and Canada, as well as in Israel. He earned his BA, MS, and PhD from Yeshiva University and received his rabbinical ordination from Yeshiva's Rabbi Isaac Elchanan Theological Seminary. He also has an MA degree in English Literature from the City College of New York. Yeshiva University conferred an honorary degree on him in 1992. He has won numerous awards, including the National Rabbinic Leadership Award of the Orthodox Union, the Rabbinical Award of the United Jewish Communities, the Finkel Award of the New York Board of Rabbis, the Bernard Revel Award for Religion and Jewish and Religious Education, and the National Jewish Book Award in the category of Jewish Thought. He is married to Gilda Angel. They have 3 children and 6 great-grandchildren. Their son Chaim presently serves as the rabbi of Sherit Israel. It's a pleasure and honor to call on Rabbi Angel. Rabbi Angel will give a presentation, and afterwards we'll open the floor for questions.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Kradberg. And again, thank you and your wife for your kind hospitality over Shabbat. It's a great pleasure to be here. I want to just say a word of congratulations to the organizers of the conference, and more importantly, to those of you who come, who study, who are interested in ideas. God bless you. It's an important fact. It's very encouraging that there's such a lively, beautiful community here in Toronto. And my wife and I are really honored and pleased to be here, and thank you for fixing the mic. Yeah. You know, he's not used to dealing with a guy who's 6'3". Is not the easiest thing to do. Every year, thousands of people, not Jewish, make the fateful decision to become Jewish. Why do they make such a decision? It's so much easier to be a Christian or a Muslim or whatever else. You're part of a group of a billion people, a billion Muslims, a billion Christians, or whatever else they want to be. There are certainly more of them than us. To become Jewish is difficult, it's complicated. We're a lovely, marvelous people, but not always the simplest people to be part of. Everyone in the world doesn't love us. There are pressures, there are tensions, troubles in Israel, anti-Semitism all over the world. Why would anyone in his or her right mind decide to become Jewish? Question 1. The answer is yes, true. But thousands of people, and I'm saying thousands, decide every year they want to take that jump. Why do they come? Some of them are spiritual seekers looking for truth. Avraham Avinu wannabes. They're people who have gone through all kinds of permutations in their intellectual and philosophical lives, and they've come to the conclusion that truth really resides in the Torah. Brilliant, beautiful souls that find their way into Judaism. Other people come to us for a very simple and pragmatic reason. They fell in love with a Jewish person. They want to get married to a Jew, or they already are married. Their primary reason for coming to visit the rabbi is not necessarily out of great idealism to the Torah, but rather, look, they want to make the in-laws happy, they want to make their spouse happy, they want to be able to raise a family with one religion, and they want the rabbi to make things kosher. There's another category of people who discover somewhere in life that they have Jewish ancestry. Maybe they had a great-grandfather, great-grandmother. Maybe they were descendants of the Anusim from medieval Spain. There are thousands, many thousands of them coming out of the woodwork in this time. And they decide, it's interesting, I want to reconnect with my ancestors. We have one young person in our synagogue, a ger, who grew up in a Midwest town where there were no Jews in town. A very, very small Jewish community. And he was raised in a nice Protestant family. And from the time the kid was 3 or 4 years old, he tells his father, I want to be a Jew. What do they know about Jews? His father used to call him the nickname, My Little Jew. He grew up as a goy, as a good Christian. He went to college. And after he was out of his parents' home, he came and he studied Judaism and became a ger. So I asked him, why do you want to be a ger? He said, you know why? Because I was born with the Jewish soul. But somehow on the process of getting from the heaven world to this world, it got off track into Christian parents. But I'm really Jewish. And even from the time I was very little, I knew I was Jewish. So I'm not into Kabbalah, I'm not into the mysticism. But that brought him into Judaism. In the land of Israel, there are people who want to become Jewish for a pragmatic reason. They want to have the citizenship rights of being a Jew. You have thousands of immigrants coming to Israel, especially from the former Soviet Union, who don't have 100% kosher Jewish credentials. And they want to become Jews. They want to serve. They want to be in the Jewish world. Not necessarily emphatically interested in all of our mitzvot and all of our commandments, but they want to be Jews, whatever that means. So there really are a variety of reasons why people decide to become Jewish. Well, here's the interesting thing. We got to think about, I'm talking about now in the Golan more than about in Israel. When a person decides they want to become Jewish, what's going through their head? First of all, they are changing their quotation marks religion. They are also in some way changing their ethnicity. They're identifying with a particular ethnic minority group. And guess what? You'll be surprised to hear this. Very often, their parents or siblings are furious at them. You would think everyone would be happy that their kids became Jewish, but they're really not happy at all. Am I going to lose my relationship with these people if they become Jewish? And they're raised with their own religious feelings, often not positive feelings towards Jews and Judaism. So these people who are gerim are having to overcome intellectual hurdles, ethnic hurdles, identity hurdles, and also very often hurdles with their biological family. So now they've gone through all this process and figuring out all these struggles and are receiving all the negative vibrations. And they said, I'm going to do it anyway. And they come to an Orthodox rabbi. And the Orthodox rabbi tells them, are you nuts? You really don't want to do this. Not a good idea. If you want to do this, 1 in 100 get through the door. Very difficult. We have all kinds of mitzvot and we're persecuted. Get lost. So the person walks out very depressed and tries calling again. And it's all the same thing. And then they often have to do that 3 times or 4 times or 5 times. They make an appointment and the rabbi cancels it. They make another appointment. The rabbi doesn't want to talk to them. There are a great many Orthodox rabbis who will not do conversions at all. There are other Orthodox rabbis who will do them only on certain very rare circumstances. And there are very, very few Orthodox rabbis that I've ever come across who say, you know, this is a wonder. This is a phenomenon. These people that are coming to talk to us are a tremendous source of energy for the Jewish people. And these people are going through all kinds of things to come and join us. And let's give them a big hug. Welcome to the team. We could use you. You're bringing new, something new and vital and beautiful to our tradition and to our people. Whenever a person comes to convert, in my mind, it means Judaism or the Jewish people are meaningful to them. We're still attractive. People still want to join us. If we would reach a time when no one would want to come into Judaism, I'd be nervous. I'd say, what are we doing wrong? How come we have no message for anybody outside? But every ger who votes for the Jewish people is another vote for the Jewish people, saying, I want to be part of this. I want to share my destiny with you. I want to raise my children as Jews. Beautiful thing. When I was in yeshiva in the good old days, we had teachers. And the teachers taught us what all of you no doubt have learned, that it's forbidden to receive converts who are not 100% committed to keeping all the mitzvot. That's the standard thing that we all learn in yeshiva. Not only that, my teacher, and I think Rabbi Tradbuch's teacher at that time, Rabbi Melech Schechter, Alav HaShalom, wrote an article in which he says, a person who does not accept all, to observe all the mitzvot, is not a ger at all. And a person who is converted, who afterwards doesn't keep the mitzvot, the gerut is annulled backward, retroactively. There was no conversion. Why? Because conversion equals 100% total acceptance of mitzvot. So we were taught as rabbis, that's what it is. And that's what people learn in school. That's what all of us know. In 1970, I went to a bookstore in New York, and I was browsing through the shelves, and I found a book on the top shelf. It's a good thing I'm tall. And it's called Mishpatei Uziel by Rabbi Benzion Uziel. I had heard of Rabbi Uziel. He was a Sephardic chief rabbi in Israel from 1939 to 1953 when he died. And my own rabbi in Seattle was a student of Rabbi Uziel. So I pulled the book off the shelf. It cost $4.50. That was the best $4.50 I have ever spent in my life. American dollars. Yeah. Now they're about equal, right? I think American and Canadian. Yeah. You're even better than us? All right. Okay. I just took a pay cut. Yeah. Anyway, I took this book because I wanted, it was a great Sephardic rabbi. I'm Sephardic. I was curious. I never read his work. And I started reading his articles, his teshuvot, and I came to a section that he wrote about the subject of conversion. Rabbi Uziel had questions from various rabbis all over the world on how to deal with converts. So one rabbi asked, I have a person who wants to convert, and the reason he wants to convert is, it actually was a woman, the reason she wants to convert is for the sake of marriage. She wants to marry a Jewish person. Is this okay? Rabbi Uziel answered, yes, of course it's okay. There's Talmudic discussion on the subject, and the Gemara concludes that even though it's ideal for a person to come without any ulterior motives, that if a person comes with ulterior motives, nevertheless, we could still talk to the person and hopefully the person will achieve a higher level and the person could be converted. Okay, that was a fairly simple question, I guess, and he wasn't the only one. There were many other poskim who ruled the same way. But then he came with another question. The question was, there's a man, Jewish man, has a non-Jewish girlfriend or wife. He himself isn't very religious. Right? He's going out with a non-Jewish woman, so how religious is he? And he wants to convert her. Why? Because they want to have Jewish children and raise a Jewish family. So the man asks a specific question. Am I allowed to convert a person to Judaism who I know ahead of time is not going to keep all the mitzvot? He could lie, or she could lie and say, I'm going to keep them. We know she's not going to. May I convert such a person? So Rabbi Uziel goes through all of the sources, and he says, here's his conclusion. Not only may you convert such a person, but it's a mitzvah to convert such a person. You're obligated to do so. Obligated? Why? We know the person isn't going to keep all the mitzvot. Rabbi Uziel said, essentially, we have to be machmir, be very strict in the matters of intermarriage. Intermarriage is a terrible sin. Besides being a terrible sin, it destroys the Jewishness of the children. Therefore, our priority has to be holding Jewish families together. It's not so perfect. The person isn't as observant as we'd like them. You're right. He says, we do what we have to do. We tell them what to do. And then it's their responsibility. It's not our responsibility to guarantee how they're going to live their lives. We give them the information. They accept it. And then they're on their own. When I read that teshuvah, I was shocked. It was like someone spilled cold water on me all of a sudden. Where did it come from? I never heard that before. All the rabbis, all the teachers, all everything we learned from the time we were 0 years old is just the opposite. So I wrote an article, my first article that appeared in Tradition in 1972. It's already a veteran article. Was on this subject, and I called it Another Halachic Approach to Conversions. And it was basically just reviewing the teshuvot of Rabbi Uziel on the subject of conversion. So after it appeared, some people said, wonderful, it's great, I'm glad to hear such a thing. I never knew that such a thing existed. Rabbi Uziel obviously was a very great man, one of the top rabbis of his generation. In my opinion, the top, but I'll say, okay, one of the top. One rabbi from Israel got in touch with me, and he said, you should never have published that article. Why not? People shouldn't know about that. Why shouldn't people know about that? Because they'll jump to the conclusion that you could just do a sprinkle water on people and make them Jews, and you make it sound too easy. Just a second. I didn't say, I'm just presenting Rabbi Uziel's point of view. I hope that all rabbis who are involved in conversion will take it into balance. And Rabbi Tradbrooks and I were having a conversation yesterday, and he pointed out quite correctly, and I know have the same sympathy, that it's easy for a rabbi from out of town to come in and shake the boat and make all kinds of radical statements and then leave town and leave all the dirty work for this rabbi. I'm not doing that. I'm presenting a point of view on the assumption, and say it right up front, that whatever I'm telling you is for discussion, for expanding our ideas and knowledge, Torah's education, and whatever policies actually are in place is up to the rabbis in your local place. It's not up to me to come in and decide your problems and questions. It's up to your rabbis here, and you have very good and wonderful rabbis to deal with these questions. Having said that, I subsequently started studying the subject more carefully. And I realized originally I looked at it as follows. There is a normative position, namely such a position as Rabbi Melech Schachter, that you cannot do conversions if the person isn't going to observe all the mitzvot. That's normative orthodoxy. And Rabbi Uziel is kind of an oddball on the side. That's a weird idea. As I studied it more carefully, I realized, Rabbi Uziel is the mainstream, has been the mainstream since Talmudic times, and he said nothing new whatsoever, and that the opinion that says conversion is only valid if a person keeps 100% of his vote, that is something new. That is a reform. That's Reform Judaism. Sounds crazy. It sounds crazy, but go back to the sources. The sources themselves, when the Talmud has to discuss how one converts, what do we say to a convert? It's Nevamot 47a b. The Gemara says, what do we tell a convert? Don't you know that the Jews are oppressed and they have a hard time and people persecute us? And the person says, yes, I know, but nevertheless, I still want to join you. Then what do? We teach them some of the mitzvot, some of the hard mitzvot, some of the easier mitzvot. Tell them some of the rewards, some of the punishments. And the Gemara says, but you don't overdo it. You don't want to scare this person off. I'm not making any of this up. It's right in the Gemara. Rabbi Uziel looks at the Gemara and he says, what does it say? Our obligation is to tell people the consequences of being Jewish. There's persecution, there's danger, there's risk. You bring children into the world that might be hated by a billion people before they even start living. And there are some mitzvot. We have obligations. There are some. Here are some. Here are Shabbat. They don't even specify what the mitzvot are. Some mitzvot. Some easy ones. Some harder ones. Tell them about tzedakah. That they do specify. You have to tell them about charity rules. And that's it. The Gemara could have said, if someone comes to convert, you tell them, you have to sit down for 3 years and study Torah and learn all the mitzvot from A to Z and keep all of them. And when you're ready to do all that, then we'll talk business. The Gemara does not say that whatsoever. The Gemara is very, very liberal, much more liberal than we are today. In the Rambam has an amazing passage. This is quoting Rambam, Issuei Briah, chapter 13, Halacha 17. A proselyte, referring to a man here, who was circumcised and immersed in the presence of three laymen, is a proselyte. So here's a person who wants to be a convert, a man. He was circumcised, went to the mikveh. There were not even three great rabbis there. But three laymen, assuming qualified laymen, that they themselves are religiously observant people. Even if it is known that he converted for some ulterior motive, Once he has been circumcised and immersed, he has left the status of being a non-Jew, and we suspect him until his righteousness is clarified. What does it mean we suspect him? It means this person converted. We don't know anything about him. We knew that he had an ulterior motive. He converted in the presence of three laymen. We suspect him. What do we suspect him of? We're not sure, but we don't want this guy to marry our daughter yet. So is he Jewish or not Jewish at that point? Well, we don't know. From that, if we just stopped the Rambam there, we wouldn't know for sure. Although he did say at the beginning, this person is a proselyte. But now let's go further than Rambam. Even if he recanted and worshipped idols, he is considered a Jewish apostate. If he betrothed to a Jewish woman according to Halacha, they are betrothed. This guy is Jewish. Whoa, that is odd. Rabbi Schechter never taught me that. Nobody ever taught me that. Here's a person who goes, gets circumcised, goes to the mikveh in the presence of three laymen, comes out and goes to church and bows down to Mother Mary, and that person is Jewish. We don't say it was annulled retroactively. That person is Jewish. He's an apostate Jew. We're not happy with him. We don't want him to marry our daughter. We don't want him to give him an aliyah in the synagogue. We don't want him to be president of our shul. Okay. But he's Jewish. How? Why? The Gemara and the Rambam, and if you go to the Shulchan Aruch, it's the same basic thing, as the pattern I'm telling you now. If you go to the Gemara, the Rambam and Shulchan Aruch, you find that apparently they have a different perception of what Geirut is. If Geirut equals 100%, if conversion to Judaism means accepting mitzvot 100%, then the Gemara, Rambam and Shulchan Aruch don't subscribe to that. It's not there. Just not there. You can read it in. I heard the end of Dr. Kohlbrenner's previous speech. And he said how sometimes we come to texts or come to reality with our own preconceived notions. So if you have your own preconceived notion and look at it, then you explain it the way you preconceived notion tells you to do it. This case from the Rambam, I was in Israel last summer, and I was discussing it with one of the great Dayanim in Israel, the question of conversion. And I quoted this Rambam. I said, why are you being such a stickler? Why are you being such a hard-hearted person here? The Rambam says, this fellow comes and he converts, and he comes right out and he worships idols, he's still Jewish. So the person said, this Dayan said, I don't understand the Rambam. Okay. It's black on white. What don't I understand? He says, no, what the Rambam meant is this. The person studied first for 3 years. The person first learned all the mitzvot. The person agreed wholeheartedly to keep all the mitzvot, and the Dayanim were convinced he was going to keep all the mitzvot. Then in the mikveh, he had a change of mind after he got out. I said, do you really think that that's in the text? Do you really think that that's what Rambam was saying? He says, yes, absolutely. Okay, the conversation is over. It's not in the text. I don't have to defend the text. Read the text yourself. Any clear vision person will see what the text says. But if you start with a certain premise, all the texts become colored by your own premise. When did the idea come up that Judaism, conversion to Judaism equals 100% acceptance of mitzvot? You're not going to believe this. Not from the Talmudic times, not from the Gaonic times, not from the time of the Rishonim. It didn't happen until 1876. We can pinpoint it. How could we pinpoint it? Not because I did the homework on this, but there are two very fine scholars in Israel, Tzvi Zohar and Avi Sagi, who did homework. And they went through all of the sources on conversion from beginning to end. And they wrote a book called Giyur V'Zehut Yehudit. They found, the first teshuvah they found by any rabbi of any significance, dated 1876, was written by Rabbi Yitzchak Shmelkes, who I don't know much about, he's an Ashkenazic rabbi, clearly, who wrote the following question. I'm just saying that. He could have been a Sephardic rabbi too, it's okay. Yeah. But he was in Eastern Europe somewhere or other. So, Rabbi Shmalkus had the question, and he said, conversion equals 100% acceptance of mitzvot, and not just acceptance theoretically, but the person is going to keep the mitzvot. And if a person subsequent to conversion breaks mitzvot, the conversion is invalidated retroactively. That's the first time that statement was made, 1876. Now, what's really the debate? Why did Rabbi Shmalkus come to this conclusion, and why did all the previous sources not come to the same conclusion? The answer is, conversion to Judaism is a very tricky business. Because what are you converting to? What is the content of conversion? Well, it seems that historically, conversion to Judaism meant becoming part of a people, converting to a nation, naturalizing. And then, as a subsequent consequence of being part of the Jewish nation, you're obligated to keep certain mitzvot. But the essential action of conversion was, I want to be part of the Jewish people. How can I prove that? I could prove it. I could prove it just by the way the Gemara presents a case. What do you tell the person first? Don't you realize that to be Jewish, it's dangerous, there's harassment. To be part of our people is difficult. We don't say to be Jewish, the first thing you have to do is give up your gods. To be Jewish, the first thing you have to do is accept Shabbat. Or you have to kosher your home. No, they don't give mitzvot first. The first thing they say is, you know what it means to be part of the Jewish people? The guy says, yes, I accept. Okay, now you know what it is to be the part of the people. Let me explain some of the mitzvot to you as well. When Ruth, who's a classic example of Giyur, that's the primary class of Giyur, what does she say? Your nation, your people will be my people, your God, my God. First, I want to be part of your people. I'm part of your family. After I'm part of your family, then I also want to learn about your God. Tzvi Zohar and Avi Shlagi, in all of their research and all of the teshuvot and everything before 1876, they found that the assumption of conversion among everybody they studied, or pretty much everybody they studied, was that becoming Jewish means becoming part of the Jewish people. And the result of being part of the Jewish people is you have to learn mitzvot and be part of the religious tradition as well. Rabbi Shmelkes had a different point of view, which I call a reform point of view. He changed the game plan. Not for bad reasons, for good reasons. I'm not disparaging him. What he said is this. He was living at a time, in the 19th century, when there were, for the first time in history, the first time in recent history, many non-Jews wanted to convert to Judaism. It happened in the past. In antiquity, there were a lot of non-Jews converted to Judaism. But for a long time, there was no conversion to Judaism in Christian or Muslim countries. You know why? Because if Jews would convert someone, they'd get killed for it. It's a capital offense. Go try in Yemen to convert someone to become Jewish. You'll get killed for that. And that was also the rule in many Christian countries as well. Jews were very reluctant to do conversions. And when they did them, they wanted to make sure this person is 100%, 1,000% Jewish so that they don't run into trouble, that the person doesn't betray themselves. So there were centuries and centuries of negative feeling towards the risk of taking in converts. It started to change in the 19th century when Jews had more political rights and interaction with non-Jews. And what happened? Hey, Jews really fell in love with non-Jews. And even more amazingly, non-Jews fell in love with us. It's a compliment to us. We're attractive. We're good. I had an Irish woman taxi cab driver in New York, young woman, and she saw I had a kippah. Oh, she said, oh, I'm so glad to be in a car with a Jewish man, because my mother always told me, when you grow up, marry a Jewish man. They're good husbands. Okay. All right. We have a good reputation. I hope it's always true. Long and the short of it is, Rabbi Shmelkes was looking around his society, and he was saying, there are too many non-Jews who want to come in the fold, and I'm not sure it's healthy for the Jewish constitution to absorb so many people in such a short notice. We've got to make more barriers. And also he had another problem. At that time, there was already reform conversion, real reform conversion, in which it was very simple. Non-Jew could come into the reform rabbi and he'll teach him, come to my class for 2 weeks, and then you're Jewish. So in order to offset this glib treatment of conversion, as though it's something, some simple ceremony that you just like changing from, in the United States, from changing to be a Democrat to be a Republican. I don't know what the parties are here. Just sign a form and you change your parties. Rabbi Shmelkes was concerned about that. So what he said, and I think he probably still believed it, was conversion is not just a gimmick, not just a shortcut. You can't expect rabbis just to clean your dirty laundry by sprinkling water and bringing you to a mikveh and everything is okay. No. Don't come to us until you're really serious. Serious means 100% commitment to all the mitzvot. He reinterpreted, actually, conversion to mean not peoplehood, but mitzvot. The essence of peoplehood, as far as Rabbi Shmelkes was concerned, is the mitzvot. Without those mitzvot, there's no peoplehood. Now, it's not a bad theory, but it's a relatively new theory. Now, Rabbi Shmuelkes was apparently very popular in the rabbinic world, and subsequent to his time, a great many other serious, great Gedolei Torah wrote teshuvot of the same ilk. A conversion means 100% acceptance of mitzvot. So that by the time we, in our generation, are raised, we take it for granted. That's normative. That's the way it always was. I'm here to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, it wasn't always that way. On the contrary, this has represented a very severe shift in our normal pattern. Well, it may be that shift is logically a good shift. Maybe we should be very fussy. Maybe we should raise barriers very high, because we don't want people just to come in to the Jewish religion so easily, and to the Jewish people so easily. That's an argument. I understand it. But I reject it completely. I reject it completely. Almost completely. Here's what's interesting to me. I'm not a ger. I'm not married to a ger, gioret. I don't have a gerim in my family. It's not an issue that has any personal attachment to me. But why have I been, my whole career, this has been one of the really major issues in my life. I don't even know why at first. I try to psychoanalyze myself. Why do I care so much about gerim? And the answer is because gerim for me are a validation of Judaism itself. And I mentioned at the beginning of this lecture, gerim are a proof, day in and day out, that the Torah speaks to human beings. The Torah has a message. That the Jewish people have a message. That people want to be part of the Jewish families, raise Jewish families and raise Jewish kids. I look at that as a source of validation. And that these people who are undergoing so many sacrifices and taking so many risks to join us should be greeted warmly. Now, I want to tell you some of the... I've gotten, over the years, probably thousands of inquiries about... I do very few conversions, by the way, just for the record. We only do conversions in our synagogue if people are somehow connected to the synagogue. Someone in our synagogue is marrying someone out of the faith. There's an issue that comes up. Or they're adopted a non-Jewish child. Or they live in our neighborhood and they're searching for Judaism and they find truth in our synagogue. But if we do two or three in a year, that's a whole lot for us. We don't run a conversion factory. Sometimes I think we should, but we don't. It's not our thing, and we don't. But people consult me in the thousands. Now with the email, it's even worse. But every day, there's not a day that just goes by without some inquiry from somewhere. And when every time I read these inquiries, my heart sinks a little bit further. Why? Most of the cases are nightmare scenarios of people who have tried to enter the Jewish fold, and they've been rejected in very crude ways by rabbis, by Orthodox laymen, by family members, Jewish family members, etc. I want to just give several cases to show how far this thing has happened. We had a case a couple years ago of a young woman from the Soviet Union, ex-former Soviet Union, went to Israel, and she got involved she had a non-Jewish mother. She got involved with religious people, and she in fact became a very religious girl. 100% shomeret mitzvot, Shabbat, Kashrut. She wasn't married. She was only 18 years old, but she had full intentions of doing mikvah when the time came. She was very, very good. And the rabbis that would work with her couldn't be happier. So they brought her to a Bet Din in Israel. I won't say where or who. And the Dayanim interviewed her. Very serious interview. And she answered all the questions brilliantly, beautifully. And they treated a girl who's terrific. So one of the Dayanim looks at the chart and says, it says here that you're going to go to Tzahal. You're going to go fight in the Israeli armed services. She said, yes, I want to be Israeli. I want to fight in the armed services. Well, when you're in the army, are you going to wear pants? That's the uniform. Of course I want to wear pants. Just come back after your army service. We can't convert you. This woman is ready to give her life for the Jewish people. This woman, in fact, happens to be a religiously observant young lady. She's ready to give her life on the front lines for the Jewish people. And these rabbis, bless their souls, wearing pants is beyond the law. You can't wear pants. Now, you go look at the Gemara and the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch and all the great poskim, you'll never find, I don't think, correct me if I'm wrong, you won't find anybody or any too many people that will say one of the disqualifications for becoming Jewish is wearing a pants if you're in the army, if you're a woman. It's just not there. Another case. In Midwest United States, a woman was studying for 3 years to be a gioret. Everyone in her community there thinks she's terrific. She's also, there's another classic example of a person who is 100% Shomer Mitzvot. She's in love with a Jewish fellow who lives in Europe. She goes and she makes a mistake of telling the Beit Din she's in love with a Jewish fellow in Europe. So the Beit Din says, well, who is this fellow? Well, he's such and such a person. Is he religious? Yes, of course he's religious. He keeps, you know, he's a religious, he grew up in a traditional home. We want him to come here and meet us. I got to have him come from Europe to meet you? Yes. She calls up her boyfriend. You got to come to our town to meet the Beit Din. He said, I'm not converting. You're converting. You have to come. They won't convert me unless you come. So he came. And he was all very angry that he had to come. And they came before the Beit Din and they asked him all kinds of questions. And they found out that he's Masorati type. He's good. He's a doctor. He drives to the hospital, which I don't think is Asur necessarily. It depends on all the circumstances. But he's a little careless on some of the fine edges of religion. But basically, he could go to any Orthodox synagogue and feel relatively comfortable. They said, you're not frum enough. Because the boyfriend's not frum enough, they're not going to convert the woman. Because they're afraid if she gets married to him, her religious level will go down. This woman is in her early, at the time, was in her early 40s. Now, they kept her for 3 years, and they still wouldn't do the conversion. So she called me, and she said, can you please help me? I said, I can't do conversions for people out of town. I can't do that. I don't want to get into that mode. If you lived in New York, I could talk to you. She said, I'm moving to New York. And she did, by the way. Then when she came to New York, I still was nervous. I said, I can't do this conversion unless the rabbi that you worked with in your town writes me a letter and tells me that you're a good candidate. He wrote me a letter. The Mashiach should get such a good letter. This is a tzaddeket. She's beautiful. She's wonderful. She's good. Everyone loves her. She's involved in the synagogue. She's a chesed person. She keeps all the mitzvot. I called the guy up. I said, I got this letter. There's a disconnect. If she's so good, how come we didn't convert her? He said, well, we didn't like her boyfriend. He said, do me a favor. Can you tell me the source, any source in the Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam, any of the codes, Aruch HaShulchan, anything, where it says that if the Ger's boyfriend isn't religious enough for your standard, that she can't be a Gioret? He says, well, Rabbi Angel, that's our standard. I said, just a second. That's your standard. You caused this woman 3 years of suffering. You caused this man in Europe 3 years of suffering. And you know what else you did? You lost the Jewish people at least one baby. Maybe two. Because by the time she's going to get through this process, she's going to pass the age when she could have children. How do you sleep at night? How do you sleep at night knowing that you've caused unnecessarily so much anguish to this couple and possibly deprived them of a child, which was a deprivation to all of the Jewish people? He says, well, Rabbi Angel, you have your standards. We have our standards. Stand back. Is this really a question of standards? Or a question of what you call in Ashkenazic and Yiddish, Menschlichkeit? If the halakha demands that we cannot do a conversion under those circumstances, we cannot do it. I don't want to push halakha one step over the line. But the halakha is much more fluid and has much more room than is presented to the people on this day and age. There's more room to be accepting, especially in such cases that I mentioned to you before. I'll give you another story that we had to face with, and then maybe we'll have some questions. There's a young man in, I'll say the city, Los Angeles, okay? He converted, he came from a Hispanic background. He's very poor background, very poor family. And for some reason, he gravitated to Judaism, and he found a conservative rabbi. He became a conservative ger. And he goes to the University of Judaism, whatever is the school that the conservative Jews have in Los Angeles, that's where he goes. And he's very intense. But he decided, in the course of his learning, he really wants to upgrade to an Orthodox conversion. So he went to the Beit Din. I don't know who the rabbis are. And he said this, he told a story. This is my story. This is who I am. I'm within the fold. I'm learning. I want to become Orthodox. And I said, well, that's fine. But it's a 3-year process, starting from the day that you first move into our neighborhood. After you move into our neighborhood, which is a very expensive neighborhood, then you have to have a tutor. It's $50 a week for a tutor for 3 years. And then after 3 years, we'll discuss whether or not you're eligible for conversion. So the boy said, I've been studying all these years. that should count for something. Second of all, I'm a poor fellow. I can't afford to live in your neighborhood. And I certainly can't afford a tutor for $50 a year, $50 a week. So the Beit Din said, we can't help you. Out. So the guy was very crushed. So he thought he would try to be a wise guy. So he went to a Sephardic Beit Din. So he went to the Sephardic Beit Din and told them the same story. So the head of the Sephardic Beit Din said, if the Ashkenazim will charge you $50 a week, we're going to charge you $100 a week. Out. Out the door. The guy writes to me, emails to me. What can I do? What should I do? I really want to be Jewish. I want to be accepted. They're not letting me come in through the door. So I could hold his hand. I could pat him. I could console him. But I really can't help him. Because what's happened within the Orthodox world, and it's happening even more and more, is a constriction of options. Instead of finding ways to open the doors and reach people in a human way, we're finding more and more ways to build more and more obstacles. And this brings me to the last thing I want to discuss, and that is the closing of religious options within the Orthodox community. Just on the subject of Geirut, I'm not going to talk, I have a lot of things to say about that, but in the area of Geirut in particular, of conversion, it's more or less accepted within the Beit Din world that conversion has to follow the standards of Rabbi Shmalkus and not the standards of Rabbi Uziel. Our concern has to be with 100% Shemirat Mitzvot rather than with holding Jewish families together and raising Jewish families and Jewish children. There's a balancing act. I agree. I understand. One has to make judgments. And not every case is simple, but I don't want to oversimplify. The chief rabbinate in Israel, certainly since Rabbi Uziel's day, who was the first chief rabbi of the Sephardic chief rabbi when the state of Israel was founded, and Rav Herzog and all the subsequent chief rabbis, have had a policy which was intelligent, namely that conversions performed by Orthodox rabbis in the diaspora are accepted in Israel as being valid conversions. They don't accept non-Orthodox conversions because they don't think they're halachically proper. But Orthodox rabbis, they assume, are smart enough and serious enough to be able to do conversions on a serious basis and a halachically appropriate basis. That was the rule for the first 58 years of Israel's existence. Then comes along the current chief rabbinate, which is not my favorite group, as you'll soon tell. And Rabbi Amar, the Sephardic chief rabbi, the successor of Rabbi Uziel, became a Rabbi Shmalkus. His philosophy, typical to the whole Haredi world, and much of the so-called modern Orthodox world, conversion equals 100% Shemirat Mitzvot. Someone who's not willing to do that can't come through the door. Not only that, he starts initially to say we're not going to accept any conversions done by Orthodox rabbis in the Gola anymore unless they're under our supervision, unless by an authorized Beit Din. When that statement was first made, it undercut, in my opinion, the Orthodox rabbinate of North America, not to mention Europe and other places, but I'm concerned about North America. So I got in touch with the Rabbinical Council of America leadership. I'm a past president. And I protested vehemently. I said, we have to stand up against this. This is tyranny. This is not correct. We should have the right to do what we've always been doing correctly. If they feel that this Rabbi A or Rabbi B is not competent, or some people are running conversion factories, or they're doing it in a very inappropriate way, fine. Let's call those individuals to the Beit Din of the RCA and talk it over with them and see if it's true or not true. But the assumption should be there's a chazaka, all of us are doing a good job. And if we have one, two, three, or four that are not doing a good job, we should talk to them. And if they still don't do a good job, okay, throw them out of the RCA. But we shouldn't start with the assumption that we're all not kasher, we're all pasul to start with, unless the chief rabbinate says it's okay. So what did the RCA do? God bless them. They caved in entirely to the chief rabbinate. They said, you know, if the chief rabbinate asks it, they have the power, they have the authority. We want our conversions accepted in Israel. Let's go along with it. My humble opinion, they just sold out the North American Orthodox rabbinate. But what do they do? They said, we're going to establish regional Batei Din under the auspices of the RCA. And those regional Batei Din will basically follow certain standards. And those standards will be the ones that are approved by the chief rabbi in Israel. So that every conversion done by these Batei Din will then be approved by the rabbinate in Israel. On the surface, it looks like streamlining, looks like it's making things more efficient. What it really is doing is removing options. What it really is doing is saying there's one way to do this. You're going to do it our way. And if you don't do it our way, it just doesn't count. So you can get three wonderful Orthodox rabbis who do a wonderful, fine, kosher conversion But if we're not following this particular process of the RCA and the Rabbanut, that person will go to Israel and get married and they will not be treated as a Jew. I reminded the chief rabbis and I reminded others, including members of the RCA, if a person converts to Judaism halakhically correctly and you cause that person pain or question him or her, you're guilty of at least 36 Torah transgressions, and according to some, 46. Every one of these people and every one of their children that is questioned about their Jewishness, even though they had perfectly halakhically good conversions, every time that person feels a bit of pain, the rabbis in charge are guilty of 36 or maybe 46 transgressions. How can you live with that? How do you sleep at night knowing this grief that you're causing people for no reason at all? Except, I don't want to call it a power grab, but that's what it is. It's to constrict power into fewer and fewer hands. And power only specifically in the hands of those who will follow that party line. So I'm not very popular in the RCA. I'm not going to run for president again. Yeah. I wouldn't run anyway. My wife wouldn't let me. But no, I understand. So I go out on the limb. I go out on the limb by saying things which I think are true and correct halakhically, emotionally, sociologically, and good for the Jewish people. And I know very well the so-called establishment doesn't agree with me. And I also appreciate the fact that the establishment has good arguments on their side. We don't want a floodgate of people coming in who are not sincere, who just want rabbis to do magic formulas for them. My argument is rabbis, good Orthodox rabbis, have never done that anyway. It's not as if there are thousands of Orthodox converts every year. There aren't. There are very, very few. The Reform and Conservative do lots of them. The Orthodox, even in the best days, if we did 100 or 200 in the whole year, that would be a whole lot. I don't think the Orthodox, all the communities in America, North America, did more than that in a whole year. Maybe 300, but not more. And most of those, I'd say all of those, were done by people who were very competent and very sincere. What people don't realize is that when a rabbi takes on a case of a conversion, I know it's with me, I don't sleep at night. I find myself emotionally very deeply involved with that person, and I feel a sense of responsibility for the person, and I don't want this person to fail. And the person has struggles and has questions and has issues, and those issues become my issues. So every time a person calls up and says, I want to convert, I say, oh no, to myself. I tell them, yes, to them, please come, I'm happy to talk with you. But for me, it's going to mean hours and hours of extra time, often with very emotionally grueling questions, dealing with families, dealing with the non-Jewish family, dealing with the Jewish family. It's a very jarring and difficult thing to do a conversion. So it's not as if we want hundreds of people to walk through the door. We wouldn't be able to do it. But at least to allow the latitude of opinion, which is correct opinion. I'm not saying to go beyond that opinion. When the RCA wanted to issue standards, I said, here's the standards you should follow. Jewish standards. One, the rabbis of the RCA agree to follow the standards of conversion set out in the Gemara, Rambam, and Shulchan Aruch. B, that's it. That's it. If I do something in line with the Gemara, Shulchan Aruch, and Rambam, I feel comfortable. I did it okay. I don't have to follow every Chumrah in the world. I'd like to. In some cases, I can. I have a single person who's not in any rush. Sure, I could take 3 years. I could take 5 years. I could teach him Rashi and Tosafot. But I don't have to. And I think rabbis need to feel to know, and the public has to know, that there is a greater latitude on the subject than is usually presented. I want to close by saying to a certain extent, I think the conversion phenomenon is reflective of issues in Orthodoxy in general. We've lost our confidence, actually. Orthodoxy isn't sure anymore. Do we really represent the Torah values? How can we really compete with this world out there? So the higher walls that we can build and the more protections we can build, we feel safer. Ladies and gentlemen, this isn't the generation to feel safe. This is the generation to open up. This is the generation to have a visionary Judaism. This is the generation to draw on our great traditions, on the whole variety of our traditions, to make a better Jewish world for ourselves and for our children. The conversion issue is one symptom of a deeper disease, a deeper problem. Let's get confident in ourselves. I said last night that we've been in business for 3,500 years, and with all of our failings and all of our problems, we've succeeded. We're here. I feel we should have that confidence we'll be here at least 3,500 more years. And sometimes you have to take risks, and sometimes you have to go out on a limb. But if we all would do that, or at least support those people who do that, we'll find ourselves having a better Judaism, a more vibrant Judaism, a more inclusive Judaism, and a more compassionate Judaism.
As the moderator, maybe you want to have a seat.
Yes, I'm waiting for that.
Okay, let me just, as the moderator of this session, I was asked to be the moderator, I guess, because I'm moderate. So I want to give just a moment of a comment, and then we'll open up for questions. So let me just put this in context. I was the director of the Besden here in Toronto for 10 years, up until just a couple of months ago. I am a member of the RCA Garris Commission of 10 people who was involved in these Garris standards, including the recent visit of Rav Amar, the chief rabbi, to New York to meet with the RCA to discuss these things. In the 10 years that I was involved in conversions here in Toronto, I interviewed on the phone and in person over 1,000 people in conversion. Was involved personally as part of the process in over 200 conversions of adults and over 200 conversions of children. I had all of the files of all the conversions done in the past 25 years, and when I would look through those files and sit in carpool line and see all the wonderful converts and the impact that they had on our mainstream Jewish community, it was very encouraging. In meeting with converts, I would never say get lost. However, there would be times in which I would say to people, you know, you need to have informed consent and you need to know what you're getting into, because to accept someone who afterwards would live a life of pain, it's also not fair to them. So I have a couple of comments. I'm really glad we spent Shabbos together, because you'll know I say this out of love. I don't say this out of any malice.
Here comes the trouble.
And I do want to mention that Rabbi Cardoza was supposed to be here for this session, but unfortunately his mother-in-law had a heart attack and was gravely ill, and he was not able to come. So I'm not replacing Rabbi Cardoza, but I have a couple of comments. It's really good to go back to the sources and to look at the Talmud, to look at the Rambam, look at the Shulchan Aruch. But we have modern poskim. We have modern halachic authorities. Rav Lichtenstein, if you want to take from our camp, you have the Haredi camp, which is more stringent maybe. But we have our poskim too. We have the modern Orthodox leaders, Rav Lichtenstein, Soloveitchik. We can look at Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg. We can look at other people in the modern world, and I think Rav Uziel's position is not the mainstream position, as you pointed out. The mainstream position in conversion has been that a Jew is a part of the Jewish people, and it is a religion based on mitzvahs, on behavior. So to become a Jew, you need to have a spiritual upheaval to become part of what a Jew is, according to the Torah. And most of the Torah is dealing with mitzvahs. So Avraham and Sinai, Jewish people and mitzvahs. It's got to be both. And I think Rav Lichtenstein wrote an article in Tradition a number of years after your article, in which he outlined that quite definitively, that the essence of a Jew is the acceptance of being a servant of Hashem, which is mitzvahs. I think it is not coincidental that 1876 is the year that you point out. The Jewish community in Europe at the time was going through the emancipation and the erosion of Judaism. And the issue then became more poignant. Someone said to me once, they were from the French Congo, And most of the Jews in the French Congo had come from the island of Rhodes. And a woman came to convert, and she met with the rabbis and converted. Because in the French Congo, to be a Jew meant all the Jewish stores were closed on Shabbos, everyone went to shul, everyone kept kosher. So that's what it meant to be a Jew. You walked in the door. That's what Jewish was to keep all of the mitzvahs. Now, certainly in times, not all Jews kept all the mitzvahs, but that's what it meant. He didn't need to spell that out. In 1876, he needed to spell that out, because that's not what it meant to be a Jew. I want to point out also in the RCA, the issue of standards is, I think, what precipitated the move to have regional Batei Din was that rabbis over the years have done conversions with different standards. The RCA view for 20 years or more, beginning in the time in which Rabbi Yeris from our own community was the head of the Yeris Commission, has said that RCA rabbis should do conversions with the standard of accepting all of the mitzvahs, that the convert has to accept everything, Shabbos and kosher and davening and men tefillin and everything. But the rabbis weren't doing it. So is it kind to a convert who goes to a rabbi who does conversions with a different standard only to find out later that other Orthodox rabbis won't accept that? So that's not fair to the convert to put them through that. So even though that was on the books, the rabbis weren't doing it. And the Rabbanut was fully aware of that. And the Rabbanut had conversions which they felt were irresponsibly done. So they didn't know. They don't know who Rabbi Angel is. They don't know Tradbergs. They don't know people. They don't know who the people are here. And so they wanted to have some method together with the RCA that everyone could work together and to have the conversions be accepted. And I think that, the crucial factor, some of the stories you told are painful. And rabbis make mistakes. Everyone's human. I think we have to be careful about bashing the rabbis. Everyone's sincere. Everyone's in it to help and to be good. And sometimes people are put through unnecessary pain and anguish in the conversion process. And the reason for that is if you view that conversion means a person becomes Jewish, is now responsible for all the mitzvahs, and then doesn't do the mitzvahs, then have we really done that person a favor? They become Jewish, now they have many, many, many mitzvahs to do, and they don't do them. Was that really a favor? Did we do them a favor? Or did we not? I think we often take the view that we didn't do them a favor. A person should remain a pious Gentile, have the merit of being a Gentile. We believe that a person who is not Jewish and is a pious person has a place in the world to come. You don't only have to be Jewish. And so did we do them a favor? So if we know factually, I can tell you that in our conversions here in Toronto and the Beis Din, which is a very high standard, some people feel too high a standard, but again, it's balancing things. A very high standard. Many people who stand in front of us, and this is after the whole process and after all the learning, and this is not the many people who don't come back, and say, I will keep the mitzvahs for the rest of my life. We know 2 years later, many of them don't. It's not because they weren't sincere at that moment. Life is hard. It's a hard life. And people reject things. So if that gives me pain. So I think there's maybe too much caution to avoid accepting people into a process where we know it's going to be hard for them to maintain this over years. I'll just tell one story, then I will open it up for questions or alternate comments. I'll just tell you one thing. When I would interview people, and we had discussed this at the Beis Din, if I interviewed a candidate for conversion who was Oriental or Black, I would say to the person, you know, it's great if you want to be Jewish. You have to know what you're getting into. Not all Jews are such tolerant people. You know, how is it going to feel to you if because you're black, you won't get married? No one will want to marry you. You know, are you aware of that? I'm not discouraging. I want you to know if this is something you're aware of, then that's informed consent. So when it would come to teenage kids, I would say the same thing. If a teenager came, I would say to them, you know, this could affect your social life, your dating. You know, this is a heavy thing you're getting into. And because kids change so much, who knows what this kid will be like in a few years. So I just want to tell one good story. I had one boy, who many of us know, David Kitabinski, comes to me, 16 years old, and he says he wants to convert, and he comes with his mother. And I sat with he and his mother. I told him he had to bring his mother. And I sat with he and his mother, the Polish Catholic family. And I told him, you know, it's really nice. Keep up your study of Judaism and everything. It's really nice, but, you know, I don't think it's really the right time for you. Let's wait till you're a little older. He was so mad. He went back and he started to learn, and he came back the next year. And the first time he came to shul was Yom Kippur. And they were staying at the Moreskis. And David was saying Pesukei Zimur. So he came right when we started davening, stayed the whole day in shul. Told me it was great. Okay, that was interesting to me. I don't know, you know, how the whole thing is in Hebrew. How was it great? A few weeks later, he was with us for Shabbos, and we had a Talmud class in the afternoon. So I asked, who wants to read? So he said, I'll read. Oh, okay. And he reads the Gemara perfectly and translates it. I said, Mapitom, what's this? He said, well, I was so mad at you last year when you told me that I, you know, it's not for me. I went out and I learned Hebrew and I got the Art School Gemara and I taught myself Aramaic from the Art School Gemara. And that's where I am. You know, so my assessment the year before may have been a little too harsh for him, but he became a Ger Tzedek beyond belief. Anyway, I think those are my comments. I think that there's a lot of balancing, and I think everyone is sincere, and I'm just reluctant that, you know, when we take an approach which is not what I feel is the vast majority of modern poskim who require full Kabbalah semitzvahs, are we really doing the converts a favor?
Thank you. Let me just comment very quickly. There was a very interesting book article written by Shmuel Shiloh from the Mishpat Ivri series in Israel, in which he discussed the position of 13 modern-day poskim who hold, just like Rabbi Uziel, Sephardic and Ashkenazic rabbis. To be sure, I said at the beginning, it's not mainstream of modern poskim, but I think sometimes we get ourselves into a rhythm which is really an incorrect rhythm. And I think it's time to go back to the original sources and open the discussion. And in terms of standards, what's very important, when people say standards, I always look at that as a code word. Standards means standards, but who's setting those standards? And what it often means is precluding options. Whenever people say we want standards, it means we don't want options. And in terms of other how it worked before, with so-called without uniform standards, it worked just dandy. When we have weddings, we don't have uniform standards. We don't ask every rabbi to submit every couple to a bet din. We trust that the rabbis have proper standards and do interviewing properly and do weddings properly. In terms of worrying whether these people will keep them in spot or not, our job is to inform. Our job is not to be responsible for people for the rest of their lives. When you do a wedding, not rabbi, this rabbi I'm sure does, other rabbis, can you guarantee that the woman's going to go to the mikveh every month for the rest of her life, as long as she needs to go? You can't guarantee that. You teach them, you tell them, but you still have to marry these people, because that's the right thing to do at this point. Likewise with conversion, sometimes you have to convert these people in order to maintain families. Sure, if the person is a single person that has no attachments, you can say, okay, be a Ben Noach. But if the person is marrying a Jew, it's not just this person at stake. It's a Jewish partner. It's the kids that will be born from this relationship. So there are a lot of other factors. I love Rabbi Tradbrooks. And it was a wonderful Shabbat for me. I think this is a saint and a pious and a great man. And even though we clearly disagree on this particular subject, I think he's one of the great rabbis of our generation that I know. And I say it honestly, not as a flattery. I'm very tough with my compliments. And I think it's good that you made your comments just to show the public that there really are different ways of seeing the same issues. So thank you. Okay, now we'll take questions. Yes.
Sorry.
Yes, okay.
My question or comment is more directed towards Rabbi Tradbirtz, and that is, what has changed in the last 5 years that all of a sudden we had to make these changing standards? Why did we require an external impetus like Beit Din in Israel to make those changes? And last night we talked about Baalei Tshuva taking on mitzvot one at a time and not rushing into things. Why do we expect people who are becoming gerim to take on all mitzvot at one time, whereas we don't even expect that of our own people?
Just want to mention in the same vein as Rabbi Angel did in response that I sat in on the Besdin of Rav Druckman in Israel together with Rav Marcus about 18 years ago. And Rav Druckman has been attacked, of course, for his conversions. And he is a modern Orthodox posek, and he's now also starting to be involved with Tzohar in regards to Shemitah. And I wish the RCA had some backbone like Rav Druckman is having now to set up an alternate to the capitulation to the Haredim. But furthermore, the question I want to ask is, Rav Shmelkes had a certain battle to fight in 1876. He might be right then. We all know that generals usually fight the wrong battle. They're fighting the wrong war. Is that what's happening to Orthodoxy today? And all I can say after listening to this, this is just a microcosm of many more issues. I'm repelled by Orthodoxy. I find it difficult to remain there until I hear a lonely voice like Rabbi Angel. And in Toronto, there are no lonely voices.
Bless your soul.
I will say that that Joey and Rabbi Angel said a few of the things I said, but one of the things Rabbi Traberg said was that who are these rabbis in Chutz Laaretz? Do we know them? Without naming names, who is the Rabbanut, and what are their credentials? And we all know, unfortunately, too many stories that we won't mention here. And so, are we supposed to, and who are these men who are telling our rabbis, who we hope, if they're members of the RCA, have good smichas and are knowledgeable, that they can now dictate to our communities? And I just voice what, like to second what Joey said, and also in terms of marriage, I thought of that.
Okay, I'm sorry to have stolen your session here. So let me just approach a few of these. First of all, part of the discussion of the RCA Gerus Commission with the chief rabbi, who was invited to New York to meet with the RCA, was to talk about both sides. It was also talk about the Rabbanut's standards, and this, we have to be honest. There are Orthodox rabbis who have done conversions that are shameful. I had a woman tell me, she went to an Orthodox rabbi who always trumps who he got his smicha from, and she was sitting in the hotel, 5 months pregnant, and she was with her husband, had been rejected by Holy Blossom for her conversion, because they wanted the conversion done before the child was born, and Holy Blossom would not do it. And she went to an Orthodox rabbi, and as they're eating their pork sausage, she said to her husband, how can we be doing this and we're going to have this conversion? And the rabbi didn't ask her anything, nothing, zero. You know, it was irresponsible. He met her, got the check, and did the conversion in an hour. That's irresponsible. So part of that is that when the Rabbanut and the RCA, I want to make clear also, the RCA Gerus Commission has existed for years, and it has been dealing with this issue, which is difficult. The RCA is not a policeman. It's not the chief rabbinate. It's an organization of rabbis. So it doesn't tell its members, if you don't do a conversion this way, you're not a member of the RCA. It has never said that. It says now that they will not take responsibility for a conversion which is done outside of the Beit Din system now. Which means that rabbis can do it, and it'll be investigated by whomever. If someone comes to me with a conversion personally to my shul, so I investigate. What was the conversion? What was the circumstance? So that will continue in the future in the RCA, but they won't take automatic responsibility for the conversions. I do want to make a statement about tolerance, too. You know, I feel very uncomfortable when we just, like, dismiss Rav Lichtenstein, the Rav. Everyone has a different view in conversion, has a strict view. They're like no good. They're not aware of the issues. I don't know, I think Rav Lichtenstein is a pretty savvy person. So I feel uncomfortable when we only complain about tolerance when it's from the right wing to the left wing. I think we have to be tolerant as modern Orthodox people, and I've said this before, we must be tolerant of people who have different views that are more stringent than ours too. Where's the tolerance? It only goes one way. We're all sincere people trying to do our best. And the Haredi people or the more right-wing modern Orthodox are sincere people too.
Let me just sneak in one comment before we're done. I'm 100% in favor of tolerance to right-wing, left-wing, middle-wing, all wings. Fine. Tolerance means recognition of legitimate halakhic options. If Rav Lichtenstein or you or rabbi in California decide in their community the need is to maintain the most rigorous process for conversions, it's not my business to tell you how to run your business. Kol hakavod. Do what you think is correct for your thing. But if other rabbis come to other conclusions, then which are halakhically based, they also should be respected. That's all. And this example you gave of a rabbi who will do a conversion for pay for in an hour's time. I never took 1 cent, by the way, ever for conversion. I don't think any rabbis ever should. But this rabbi should be, if he's in fact a member of the RCA, should be called to the Vada Kavod and should be thrown out of the RCA. Because there's one shmo like that or 10 shmos like that, chas v'shalom, those guys should be thrown out. Why cast aspersions on 990 other really good rabbis? We're at the end of the session. There's plenty to think about. You should all know that Rabbi Tradbrooks and I are on the same side. The same side is to strengthen the Jewish people in every way possible.
Okay, I stayed on the sidelines for this. Shh. Okay, shh. I think that's part of the beauty of what we do, that we can have a vigorous debate in a respectful way. Shh. Okay, just before we finish, I guess, okay, this discussion is too hot for everybody. You can continue over lunch. Now, there'll be, in this room, Rabbi Chorsky will be speaking at 11:30. Going to try to bring in a few more chairs because we expect more people. Rav Gilad Yedaber Bivrit, Be'ulam HaSisterhood. Al Hatat Lashim, Hatatim Leshavar, Hamatzav Baretz, is Misha Rotze Lishmoa, Shiur Bivrit, Bakasha Lelech Lulam Asisterud. Whoever wants to hear in English to stay in this room. A brotherhood. Hivrit Zeb Ulam Achim. How do you say brotherhood, Bivrit? Achva. Ulam Achva. She Toda. Okay. And if you want to get.